Hey everyone, welcome to episode 34 of All About Sports, the podcast. Last week we covered China and their rise in the Olympics over the last few Olympics, ever since basically they hosted the event. And we also basically deep dived into why and how they ended up succeeding and what made them this huge powerhouse in the world of sports. Today we are going to be discussing Leicester City Football Club. Congratulations firstly to Leicester City on winning the FA Cup for the first time in their history. They beat Chelsea 1-0, and I just remember that moment when Ben Chilwell scored after getting booed throughout the game and chose to celebrate, and then it was called offside. And man, football, only football, you can't write these stories. So with that, what we will be discussing about Leicester City is their entire journey. And I think it's testament and proof why the football pyramid is so special in English football. And this again takes me back to mentioning the entire fiasco around the Super League that was there. We've covered that as well. You can check out that episode too. And also we will talk about how necessarily the owners of clubs need not have football knowledge, but just should have a passion for the sport and a passion for the team they own. And I think Leicester City are a perfect example of that. And I'm going to start things off by firstly introducing my co-hosts as well. So I'm Mazhar Gadiwala. I have Shubham Malu, Rishabh Krishnan and Aniket Gui with me. Shubham, I'm going to go to you first with this. We've all seen Leicester's amazing rise after joining the Premier League. When they got promoted, they just about survived and managed to stay in the first division. And well, the rest is history. So Shubham, what makes Leicester so special? And why is it that, like, you being a United fan, I myself being a United fan as well, we not supporting Leicester as fans still love them and can't help but be happy for them. So what is it that works?
To answer the latter half of your question, I just think it's the perfect underdog story, right? Like, we all support like these big clubs, giant clubs with a lot of history, a lot of history of winning, being successful all the time. And then here you have a club like Leicester that comes along once, I don't know, like how many years, and just surprises everyone, right? Like, thinking of it back in the day, I think the only club to win the Premier League was, I think, Blackburn, which actually back then was a successful club and was really doing well. But in just terms of sheer status, it wasn't the United or the Liverpool. And I don't think that time Chelsea was big or whatever. It wasn't like the big status club. But they were doing well. And then you get Leicester, who just got promoted. And within a few years, they win the Premier League. So I think the reason why everyone really likes to cheer them on and support them is just the fact that it's a great underdog story. And everyone likes to see a club which is not expected pushes beyond, above and beyond its weight and really does well. And to answer the first part of your question, I think what really worked for Leicester, although I don't have like too much data on it, firstly, definitely it starts from the ownership. I'm 100% certain, especially when they won the Premier League, you could see how happy the owner was. So it definitely started from the ownership. And also, I think back then, who was the manager that helped them win the Premier League?
Claudio Ranieri.
I think obviously he's a great manager, but I think he was also very shrewd in the transfer market. Some of his buys, they worked out perfect because all these players were sold to like the Cities and Uniteds and Chelseas for big money, and all these guys at Leicester came for like a very little transfer fee. And I just think it was very good ownership, a very good manager, shrewd business in the transfer market. I think that perhaps did the job for them.
I'm going to take this to Krishnan now. Krishnan, Shubham mentioned it. Shrewd business in the transfer window. And their recruiting story is a gem on its own. And everything has worked. So, Krishnan, talk about that. Take us through all of that. And what was so great about what Leicester managed to do in terms of the transfer market, and they're still doing, right? So just tell us about that recruiting story as well.
No, it's really a big part of what has made them be able to be continually successful. And like Malu harped on, right, really what makes them so special is they have this perfect amalgamation when they've been successful of great ownership, great management, and finding great talent. So if we focus on that finding great talent, let's just talk about some of the players on this current team, right? Number one for me is Jamie Vardy. Jamie Vardy was probably the most obvious definition of a late bloomer. Not someone who had the quickest rise in English football, really came onto the scene late. And I was looking at, you know, his performance in recent years. In the Premier League top scorers list, he was second in 2015-2016, 14th in 2016-2017, 4th in 2017-2018, 5th in 2018-2019, and then last year was the top scorer in the Premier League. So really someone who has been phenomenal, outputting a huge number of goals that, you know, we'd expect to see from a big club, and somehow they've been able to keep him. But like you said, Maz, they've also had a lot of people who over the years they've really built up and have lost, aka Kante, aka Mahrez, aka Harry Maguire. And they have found beautiful ways to substitute those people. Let's take the defense, for example. When Harry Maguire left, that seemed like that would be a huge void for them. They fill it with someone like a Soyuncu. No one really, he was definitely a talented player even before, but no one knew he could slot in as well and as effectively as, say, a Harry Maguire. They get someone like a Johnny Evans. The same thing goes for Tielemans and James Maddison, right? Again, two players who had
Flow, Krishnan. Yeah. You carry on after this. To get someone like a Johnny Evans, who everyone thought was dead at United, his career was done with. I think he went to West Brom and everyone had given up on him. To get this guy and look at him perform now. He performs really, really well. That, I think, is real shrewd business. And perhaps it's a cheers to the scouting team, because they've done a fantastic job in this.
No, absolutely. It's a great point, because they found someone who was really not in huge demand. Like, there was a little bit of excitement from Arsenal, I remember, but really not too much around him. So very, very, very shrewd business done. And now you look at the other two people as well, right? James Maddison and Tielemans, right? Tielemans scoring the FA Cup winner for them against Chelsea. Phenomenal central midfielders who had the very, very big role of filling in for Drinkwater and Kante, but they found ways. Now, obviously, those are the players currently on the team are slightly more attacking than maybe Drinkwater and Kante, but they have found really efficient ways to fill up their voids. And that will always be the issue for Leicester, right? When we talk about them not being a traditional superpower in the English footballing space, what it means is they're going to keep losing players to the more traditional superpowers in those spaces. And they're going to have to keep making shrewd moves like that to stay on top. So far, they've done a phenomenal job, though.
Krishnan, you mentioned Tielemans coming in. You mentioned Maddison coming in. But the biggest, I think, buy for me was Wilfried Ndidi. He is so good. He was the perfect guy. They just found a younger version of Conte. And that's exactly what they needed. This Nigerian, I tell you, is a game changer. There are strong rumors that he might end up playing for Barca and Madrid, and I can truly see that happening. Why not? He's such a sly and smart player. He makes those small fouls without getting carded, breaks up play, very much like a Carrick and some of the typical central defensive midfielders used to do, a Barry, and so on and so forth. You need that to be a successful team always. Now I'm going to come to you, Gui.
Everyone's forgetting one guy who they signed, who probably became like the most deadly right wing back. Ricardo Pereira got injured out for like a very long time, so we're all missing his name. I was petrified of that guy turning up against Arsenal, because you just know, right? These are the kind of players who hurt your team. There's him, and even when he got injured, they immediately got James Justin, they got Timothy Castagne. They have... okay, we need to fill a spot. We will find someone who's doing that reliably well. And none of these guys are like a 35-40 million signing. And they fill in so well. When Timothy Castagne started playing, I think he had this small run of 4 or 5 games where he was scoring or assisting. And it tells you about how they're trying to fill the void with similar-ish players who just do the same role. Not overcomplicating things. We don't want to change profiles. We don't want someone to build a team around. Let's plug the holes and then keep playing, which is great.
Yeah, they got Harvey Barnes. I think Harvey Barnes was a huge loss with injury this season. Otherwise, I don't think Leicester would have been struggling as much as they did to have secured their top four. I'm pretty certain they, in fact, would have finished second, potentially ahead of United as well.
Just one thing, because I was trying to read up about Leicester's transfer market activities. One thing that I really find interesting is now, see, transfer market, generally, a lot of clubs, their net spend is always in the positive. Basically, what I mean is they spend more than what they get back. But Leicester's, the margin is not very big. They end up losing a lot of big players, but obviously they have to sign players, and their signings are so like beautifully done to ensure that they're not losing also a lot of money. And one good thing is with the rise of Leicester, them becoming a successful team, challenging for top four, now they can't get bullied by the big clubs. So that's where some of the players are now happy to stay also at Leicester. They're not like, okay, now this is my big ticket, let me get out of here. Because now they know Leicester will challenge for top four. They will maybe not like challenge for Premier League, but they will be there in the whereabouts. So that also gives them the upper hand that, okay, now if a club comes, I won't just get bullied and my players will go. I think that's also working in their favor.
Yeah, I think one more thing that you mentioned, I think Leicester are very much like Dortmund when it comes to the transfer market. They just make the right moves in terms of recruiting. The only thing that goes against them is that there are too many good teams in the Premier League competing every year. So it becomes much harder. Dortmund, well, for them, yes, Leipzig has come up now, so it's been a bit challenging. But otherwise, they've always just been second to Munich. I'm going to bring in Gui now. Gui, talk to us about the ownership, Leicester's entire story about, you know, how they came up from the second division. When I say second division, I mean like literally League Two. So that's the fourth tier. The fourth tier of English football. So take us through that journey, and so that people also understand the significance and the importance of the entire pyramid system of English football.
So here's the thing, right? We've seen some beautiful stories come through. We've seen Swansea, we've seen Bournemouth, we've seen Leicester City, and
Sheffield United.
Bournemouth were 92nd or 93rd. I think they were basically at the brink of not being in the top four divisions. And they fought back. That's, you need to understand that time is the great factor over here, that just sheer survival. We've seen too many stories of, you know, people getting sacked like quick, right? People getting sacked, people getting the boot, and managers being like, that is the new professional game, right? It's a result driven bubble we are in terms of football, which is kind of seeping into the women's game also. We've seen like in the what, three managers get switched up in the women's Premier League, FA Super League, pardon me. But my point is, they've been around for long enough to support the team. Now, why I say that, these guys are vulnerable. You are seeing them show up to games, you see them show up and basically be a fan in spite of being an owner. You want to support your team and you want to show that vulnerability also, because it kind of shows that you're invested in the club. You're not invested in earning money. You're not, of course, those things are metrics which kind of impact your decisions all the time. But like the FA Cup winning video where they invited the owner onto the field and they were celebrating. Trust me, if Stan Kroenke shows up there, God forbid, I don't know what the players are going to do, right? They're going to be like, okay, can we touch this guy? Is the security detail going to, you know, kind of do a number on us if we're around him? But basically, it's a function of time where they've been around for so long, help nurture the club. You want to see, how do I put it? Like, investment value of the club kind of seems to be second for them, as opposed to nurturing the club to be a healthy self-run machine. And they're doing it now. So even post the Premier League win, where they got drained of players, they were smart about it. You don't want to do a Tottenham after selling Bale. You don't want to do a Chelsea after selling Hazard. Although the Hazard one is still okay. Chelsea and their money is a whole different ballgame. But they were so smart about, you know, losing the likes of Mahrez and Kante, where you slowly and gradually progress to just fill the void, even in terms of the managers, right? Ranieri stopped giving like good results. They didn't kick him out immediately. There was enough time. Like, there was this extended run where it was just not good enough and they had to do it. And now they found like an ideal signing who was available at the time. They, again, you, there was no poaching involved. There's no, how do you put it? There's no snatching involved in terms of just, even signings. It's just whatever is available, the best one, we pick those and we kind of keep the machine running. And it's worked brilliantly for them. Like, a team like Leicester City, we've been watching football for how long? I don't think I knew of them until they ever showed up to the Premier League, right? Which kind of happens with most teams. And now, if they don't turn up in the Premier League, God forbid there's ever a time where Leicester City is not in the Premier League, you'll be like shocked. Like, because that's how good a club it is. Like, you are seeing them be like function like a top side. That's my point. Like, a lot of the mid-table teams, you still don't have the feeling that these teams are run well.
It's a great point, Gui. You know, it's an interesting point you bring up, because, you know, I was just thinking from an ownership standpoint, right? When you're in a smaller club, the needs of the owner strangely maybe closely align with the needs of the fans, because it's in your best interest to make a really successful performing club. The strange thing with like the top tier clubs, right? You say take a United or an Arsenal or Liverpool. It's a strange thing where they can almost afford not to be successful and know that the fan base will still exist. They have almost like, there's almost a short-term inelasticity in the fan base. Like, the fan base will be there whether or not we perform. The fan base will be there at least for a five-year future. Whereas for a Leicester, we don't really have that global fan base. I'm sure in England we do, but we don't have that global fan base. The best way for us to get a global fan base, which is better for the business, is to just be successful. So there's an interesting alignment between business owner and fan that seems to be a little bit of a disconnect for the bigger clubs, right? For the Arsenals and the Liverpools and the Uniteds maybe of the world. Just an interesting thought that was kind of coming to my mind as you described the business owner relationship with fans and players.
You know, Krishna, just building on to what you said, I definitely feel that for an owner of a small club, building that fan base is great. But then I also feel, you know, when it comes to building a fan base, it's very difficult. It's easier said than done, because everyone, like, see, when you're a fan, I'm a fan of United. If United for the next 30 years also don't win the Premier League title, I'll still be a fan of United, right?
Exactly.
But like, to switch loyalties or to suddenly start supporting Leicester over a single title is difficult, because I don't think it will add to too many fans. Yeah, if this club is continuously successful and a generation sees them successful, then maybe that could happen. But over just like an odd title year and there, I personally feel it could be difficult. But there's just one thing that I'd like to add to what Mazhar said. And this is just like a thought that came. Mazhar, you mentioned that Leicester, because English football has so many top teams, they find it hard. I just want to know from you guys, each individually, if Leicester was in La Liga or the Italian League or French League or German League, do you think they would be consistent in the Champions League? Like, there would be a consistent Champions League playing club?
That's a hard one to answer, really, Shubham.
I think if even the French League or Bundesliga, I think they would make Champions League every year.
I definitely would say in the Bundesliga, yes, because in terms of like what I've learned in terms of watching football in these leagues is that the Bundesliga is the closest to the Premier League in terms of just the physicality over there is allowed much more. So they will be much more comfortable to playing in those sort of conditions. I don't know if it would work in the La Liga, because it's like a relatively softer league where the fouls would get called. And we've seen that. We've seen that in the Champions League, where the English teams, who would generally, like for a tackle, would not be called a foul in the the Premier League, is getting called in the Champions League. And that's something that the English teams have had to adapt to and have had to then take a step back in terms of their aggressiveness. So I'm not sure how it would play out. It would take them time. I would still think that they would be like a mid-table club to start off. But it takes maybe 2-3 seasons, then they'll find their feet. And then you can't argue that Leicester have some top talents across the board, right? You're talking about Youri Tielemans, who starts for Belgium. You're talking about Jamie Vardy, who was England's second striker for the longest time. Mahrez is Algeria's captain. Kasper Schmeichel is, first team keeper again. So they've always had those players who play international football at the highest level. And let's not forget, and not only talk about them being in the European teams. Wilfred Ndidi is a starter for Nigeria. Iheanacho is going to be a starter now. So they have the players who can do it, and they're gelling well as a team. Why not? I can definitely see it.
And I think one thing to keep in mind, and Malu kind of off riding off your point, right? The one thing is, I don't think they'd be a mainstay Champions League team in any of the top leagues. Because let's just also be honest, like Leicester have had some really high highs, but just the nature of losing players, manager volatility, they're not what I necessarily call consistent, right? I mean, if we look from 2014-15 season, they finished 14th, they win the Premier League the next season. Following season, they finished 12th. Next two seasons, they finished 9th. The following season, which was the last season, they finished 5th, and right now they're 3rd. So there is a little bit of volatility that I think just naturally comes with the fact that they lose some of their best players when they're really successful, right? They win the Premier League, they lose Kante, Mahrez. Or not Mahrez. They lost Kante right off the bat and then Mahrez a season later. So they'll always, they have a little bit of volatility, which makes me believe in any of the leagues they play in, I can't imagine they'd be a consistent Champions League team. I just can't believe that just yet. But maybe, you know, if they keep getting the support and investment needed, maybe they can grow to being that. But I don't think they'd be a mainstay as of now.
So Krishnan has already mentioned that, you know, players move. So what I hope for is people seeing how much admiration footballers around the world seeing how much admiration the Leicester team has for, you know, an owner who shows up, who's part of the team, so to speak. We revert back to the, you know, slightly older times where you want to stay with the club, you want to build a legacy with the club. So if something like that happens, Leicester could, you know, be in big time. But the way things are right now, players want to switch, right? You want to make the switch because you have a 15-year limited career. 15 in the top, like 15 years. Let's say you started 17, you play till 32, after which you're getting offered 1-year contracts. So yeah, I can understand people wanted to make the switch now.
I love that point, Gui, because I really want to again give a huge shout out to Jamie Vardy because of that, right? Jamie Vardy in 2018 signs with Leicester till 2022. A lot of clubs were knocking. A lot of clubs were knocking for a player like that who was scoring at the speed that he was. And now in 2020, he re-signed till 2023. So really special when someone like a Jamie Vardy, like, despite all the interests, chooses to stay with Leicester. And hey, man, good decision. Arsenal was knocking. Arsenal's in 9th place. Leicester's in 3rd place. Good call, man.
I think Vardy is genuinely one of the most intelligent footballers out there in terms of everything. He's played his cards perfectly. And he's been humble enough and thankful enough for the career he's achieved. And he obviously has Leicester to thank for all of that. Just wanted to also highlight, Gui, you mentioned it already. Imagine the Cronkies coming there and lifting the trophy. Rio Ferdinand mentioned this, and I'm going to bring it up. He spoke about how the Glazers lifted the NFL trophy and was wondering how Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers must have felt about that. Imagine the Glazers going and picking up the Champions League trophy or the Premier League trophy for that matter. For United before Harry Maguire and David De Gea do that. So, there'd be shoes flying around everywhere. Shoes, flares, everything, you name it. Storming the pitch was just a starting step. You pick up the title, they're going to have your neck.
And it's just wanted pretty to interesting. When I first started following some American sports, primarily the NFL, New England were on the Tom Brady train. of wins, as in the Super Bowl wins, and then I think it was the Eagles who won it the first time I watched the Super Bowl. Like, Krishnan, did the Eagles win it? I don't know the year, but the Eagles won it in some year, right?
Yeah, yeah, very recently. Yeah, 2020. Yeah, yeah, correct. I think 2016 and, or 17 they won. Correct.
And I saw the owners go and lift the trophy, and I'm like, this is so strange. This is so strange. This is probably by far the weirdest thing which I've ever seen, because I've seen Mikel Arteta pick up a trophy. I've seen Mertesacker pick up a trophy. And I've seen all of these guys pick up a trophy. And Wenger, okay, comes after all these guys. It's always the players are the champions of the sport, right? You can't. Fergie picked up the titles after all his captains. No, you didn't even look towards the coach to hand over the title to. Forget the owners. And that's what we've been like used to watching. So I found it hilarious.
Yeah, yeah, it's strange because it doesn't happen in the NBA at least. I mean, yes, they gave it to Genie Bus later, the Lakers as well. Guys, I'm going to. Now, just one thing I want Shubham you to talk about, Brendan Rodgers' legacy, before we kind of wrap up this. And then I'm just going to do like a short surprise rapid fire round with all of you. So tell us about this, like, what do you think of Brendan Rodgers? What do you make of what he's achieved ever since he's joined Leicester?
I think like how this episode started with us talking about doing good business in the transfer market, being a shrewd manager and stuff like that. I think Brendan Rodgers has a major role to play in Leicester's success. And even if you look at Rodgers' career in general, Swansea, I think, was the first ever Welsh club to make it to the Premier League. And it was managed by Brendan Rodgers back then. He takes on Liverpool. Liverpool was struggling back then. Gets them super close to winning the Premier League title thanks to Steven Gerrard. That never happened. Thanks to his amazing slip. But then, other than that also, he made them a very competitive team when he was with Liverpool. He made them a very competitive team. He bought players. I don't think Suarez was signed by him. Suarez was signed by Kenny.
Coutinho, I think. He got Coutinho.
Yeah, Coutinho was brought in by him. A lot of players he basically bought in the club who became the main strike force for Liverpool and made them a deadly team back then. And obviously, unfortunately, time runs out with Liverpool. He goes to Celtic and his achievement out there is just crazy. He has the longest unbeaten run in Scottish football history. Wins two domestic trebles, which has never happened in Scottish football history. And then he comes to Leicester. Last season, like Krishnan mentioned, I think they finished fifth. This season, they are about to qualify for Champions League football. Hopefully, they make it. I really want them to make it. And he wins the FA Cup. So I just think he is a great manager. He's had major achievements in his career. And a manager like him at Leicester is, I just think, like the perfect match made in heaven. He has the support of the owners, which is very important, and you don't get it much nowadays. He has the support of the owners. It seems like the players understand him. They love the way he is. He is doing a great job. He's a manager with a lot of experience. I think he was also in the Chelsea backroom staff when he was just starting off in his career. So this guy has been to a lot of places. He has a lot of experience. And yeah, man, I think he's a great manager.
Fantastic. I think Shubham pretty much capped off this entire sort of segment that we wanted to cover of Leicester City, their legacy and everything that they stand for. Now, guys, it's time for one of our favorite segments as usual. This is going to be slightly different. It's not going to be a quiz. It's just going to be a rapid fire. Pretty much unplanned. I might not give all of you the same questions. So just shoot at it right away. No thinking. Obviously, there's no right or wrong answers here. It's purely going to be opinion-based. So I'm going to start off with you, Gui. Your top three Premier League players of all time, but I'm going to have to remove Arsenal from that list.
So, your top three Prem, so 92 on, right?
Yes, yes. Premier League era. So, just name...
Were you going to name someone before 1992?
No.
Yeah, he might have.
Who knows? Okay. Shearer definitely has to be there.
Come on, Gui. It's rapid fire.
Shearer, Ronaldo, and just for variety, just for the sake of variety, I'm going to say Lampard.
Because no one's going to take his name. Shubham's so happy right now. He's so happy right now.
Okay. Ronaldo has to be there.
Shubham, I'm going to come to you with this question.
Minus United?
No. I'm asking you another question. Your three least favorite United players ever?
Great question, Mazar. Great question.
Shubham, you want help? You want
Bebe,
help?
Bebe. To start off with Chelsea, Bebe.
Okay.
Then
Obertan.
Oh yeah, yeah. Obertan also.
If Forlan for United was shit, just
hey, don't say like anything. He's a cult hero. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. He was our Kanu in a lot of ways. So don't go there. Don't go there.
Go away.
Shubham, come on.
Bro, I can't think of a third player. Putting you on the spot. I can't think of a third player right now.
Mazhar, me and Gui want the same question, but 10 players.
Okay, fine. Shubham, we'll stick with two. I'll move ahead. Krishnan, on to you now. Your three least favorite teams in England.
Oh, okay, least favorite teams. I think I'd have to say... Oh, that's a great question.
Manchester United.
I think it's... I have to say Manchester United one because I've had such traumatic experiences with the fan base growing up in India. There's so many...
I also feel the way you guys are going, you should mention Arsenal also.
Honestly... So I have to say Manchester United. I'm going to say Birmingham City because I remember them beating us in the Carling Cup final. And I remember thinking, oh my God, we're finally going to get silverware and they beat us. So I have to say Birmingham City. And I think this is a good question, man. The third one, honestly, at this point is, let's see who's above us in the Premier League right now, man. I think it's probably whichever team is above us. Oh, honestly, West Ham. I just don't like West Ham for whatever reason. I think they spend a bunch of money and just don't have that much success. So West Ham probably. West Ham's the third one.
Fair enough. Okay. Krishnan, coming to you now again. Your favorite all-time striker? Apart from Henry,
I think
any league. This can be any league. Again, just gonna put that out there.
Oh, perfect. Any league. Okay. I think any league. If we're excluding Henry, and this might be, you know, because I saw him kind of in his prime. I think when Van Persie had that prime year, you know, that was just one of the best striker years I've watched. And because I'm an Arsenal fan, I watched so much of it. It just has a very special place in my heart. So I'm gonna say Robin Van Persie, and obviously a biased opinion.
Shubham. The most
I feel
the okay. Yeah, I was gonna say, ask you the your favorite, who was your childhood hero or childhood idol?
David Beckham.
I knew it. David, I just Beckham. Had a feeling it had to be Gui, to you, the most underrated player in world football ever that you believe.
Easy, Ricardo Kaka, no question about it.
I don't think he was underrated.
That's his argument.
So going back to the Beckham, we have to make Malu do an underwear photo shoot for our this thing guys, at some point.
Hey, before that, you complete your challenges, okay?
Okay, guys, this question is for all of you, and then we'll wrap up. Your most, the one player you believe is the most overrated of all time. Anyone wants to go first? Okay, fine. The most overrated player from your the club you support. So, Shubham, you can go with the most overrated player United has ever had or you've watched. Krishnan and Gui, you guys can go for Arsenal. If that helps narrow it down.
For Arsenal, and this is really harsh, but I'm going to have to say Abu Dhabi. And it's very, very harsh because obviously his career was destroyed by injuries, but there was this weird narrative that, like, if not for injuries, he'd be a legend. And I'm like, you really can't say that. Like, you really have no way. I feel bad for him, but there's no way you can say that. So maybe Abu Dhabi.
Gui, Shubham.
I feel Lukaku's overrated. Yeah. I don't know why I feel he's overrated.
Fair. I still sort of agree with that in a lot of ways. I know he's had a stellar season with Inter and led them to the Serie A, but... I'm with you on this one, Shubham.
I'm going to say Oxlade-Chamberlain. Like, when he went, I was like, for 40 million, I was like, great money, dude. What's the issue? And everyone's like, oh no, academy product going. Screw it. Wants to play center mid. Go play.
So there you have it, folks. This was weekly episode number 34 from All About Sports and Podcast. Like, share, comment, subscribe. You know the drill. Check us out on all our audio platforms as well. And we'll be back with another new episode very soon. Till then, take care. Stay safe. Bye-bye.